Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Ashley and I will bring you those stories, along with Mario Ritter and Anne Ball. Later, Ana Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Mario Ritter.
U.S. astronaut Peggy Whitson broke the record Monday for the most total time spent in orbit by an American. Commander Whitson, who is currently aboard the International Space Station, has been in space a total of 534 days during her career. U.S. President Donald Trump spoke to Whitson by video from the Oval Office.
534 days and counting. That's an incredible record to break. And on behalf of our nation and, frankly, on behalf of the world, I'd like to congratulate you. That is really something.
The 57-year-old Whitson is the most experienced U.S. woman astronaut. When she returns to Earth next September, NASA says she will have spent more than 650 days in space during three stays on the ISS. Speaking from space, she told the president what this day meant to her.
Well, it's actually a huge honor to break a record like this, but it's an honor for me back basically to be representing all the folks at NASA who make this spaceflight possible and who make me setting this record feasible.
She explained to Trump how technology in the ISS allows astronauts to convert their urine to drinking water. She said it is not as bad as it sounds. Commander Whitson said her dream to be an astronaut came from the Apollo program that sent men to the moon in the 1960s and 1970s. It became a goal for her when the first female astronauts joined the program. Holding records is not new to Whitson. In 2008, she was the first woman to command the space station. This year, she became the first woman to command it twice. Last month, she set the record for most spacewalks by a female. She has spent more than 53 hours outside the space station. And from 2009 to 2012, she was the first female chief of NASA's astronaut office. With a doctorate in biochemistry, Whitson has held a number of research-related positions at NASA. During the current mission, Expedition 51, Whitson and the other crew members aboard the ISS are conducting about 250 science experiments. They include increasing the effectiveness of chemotherapy drugs for cancer treatment and growing fresh food in space. Being able to grow fresh food in space is a necessary part of sending humans to Mars. Last month, President Trump made humans reaching Mars by the 2030s an official goal for the space agency. Whitson told the president that NASA officials are excited about the missions to Mars in the 2030s. Her fellow U.S. astronaut, Jack Fisher, arrived at the ISS last week for the first time. He also spoke to the president about nations working together in space.
It's amazing. The International Space Station is by far the best example of international cooperation and what we can do when we work together in the history of humanity. And I am so proud to be a part of it.
Congress still has to approve the money to fund the president's program of getting humans to Mars. I'm Mario Ritter.
Skyscrapers look like their name. They are buildings so high, it appears like they are scraping or touching the sky. With better technology, architects, people who design buildings, engineers, and builders have been able to build buildings higher and higher. For the cities and countries where they are built, they bring a sense of pride and visitors. They bring their money and the desire to be entertained. Daniel Safarik works for the Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitat, a group with members all over the world. He says the race to build tall buildings started in the United States in the 19th and 20th centuries between companies showing their economic power. Now, he says, the competition is between cities and countries.
Part of the competition, of course, just has to do with pure height and the bragging rights to say that you hold that title. That is certainly the case with, you know, the top 10 or 20.
But just being a very tall building is no longer enough to get people to visit. Safarik says those that invest heavily in entertainment will be most successful financially.
Some of the things that they have done is put amusement park-style rides at the top. That includes Ferris wheels, roller coasters, sheer drop type rides where you're basically just in a moment of free fall before whatever safety equipment they have engages.
Older buildings have added items like glass floors or tilting rooms that give you the feeling of looking out high over the edge. Even within the same city, some of these tall buildings compete for people's attention and money. Take Shanghai, China, for example. The Shanghai Tower is the world's second tallest building. Its unusual shape, rounded and twisted, with a second outer layer, is a sight to see. Nearby is the Shanghai World Financial Center, number 9 on the list. There, you can walk on a sky bridge with a glass floor to look down to the roofs and neighborhoods below. Safarik says a third building in the city, the 19th tallest one in the world, also opened a new attraction.
The Jin Mao Tower, which is the oldest of the three, has just recently opened up an experience where basically you can be tied to the side of the building and lean over the edge outdoors and sort of test your fortitude.
Because of what it takes to get these buildings to rise up out of the ground and stay there, Safarik says they are some of the safest buildings around. Grouping many people in one place makes sense as the planet's population grows. These tall buildings can be environmentally sustainable, especially when they are located near mass transportation like trains and subways. How high will the next ones be? For now, one limit appears to be elevators, how fast and far they can go, and what people's comfort level is. Here is a list of the top 10 tallest buildings in the world.
Burj Khalifa. Standing 828 meters high, this building in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, has 163 floors. The center of a new downtown, it was completed in 2010. It calls itself a vertical city. Level 148 holds the world's highest observation deck. A new spiral flight enclosed in glass connects levels 124 and 125. And opens to views of the city.
Shanghai Tower. Shanghai Tower, completed in 2015, has 128 floors and is the tallest of three in the city's finance area. The curved building is 632 meters tall, and its twisted shape provides protection from wind. It has a see-through glass second skin that wraps around the building. It has one of the world's fastest elevators that moves up at 20.5 meters per second.
Mecca Royal Clock Tower. Standing at 601 meters high, this tower is in the center of the holiest Islamic city, Mecca, Saudi Arabia. Completed in 2012, it has 120 floors and housing for Muslims making the journey there every year for the Hajj. Four very large clocks, the largest and highest in the world, are located near the top of the tower.
Ping An Finance Center. Located in Shenzhen, China, it stands 599 meters high and was completed in 2017. It is connected to neighboring business and residential properties. The tower's shape narrows to form a pyramid at the top. It has 115 floors and the world's largest stainless steel facade, or face.
Lotte World Tower. Newly opened in Seoul, South Korea, the 123-story glass and steel structure is South Korea's tallest building. It rises 554.5 meters above the Seoul skyline. The tower features the world's highest floor made of glass. The building also has the highest swimming pool in the world and one of the world's fastest elevators.
One World Trade Center. This New York City building replaces the World Trade Center towers that were destroyed on September 11, 2001. It rises 541.3 meters above the memorials in the ground where the Twin Towers once stood. With 94 floors, the building helped bring back downtown Manhattan as a business center. It is the tallest building in the Western Hemisphere.
Guangzhou CTF Finance Center. Located in Guangzhou, China, this building is 530 meters high with 111 floors. Completed in 2016, it has four setbacks as it climbs in the air. This design allows for sky terraces and dramatic skylights. The use of terracotta as a building material helped environmentally.
Taipei 101. Located in Taipei, Taiwan, this building was the first 100-plus-story building built in the 21st century. It once was the world's tallest building because it had a 60-meter spire that made it 508 meters. The tower's top section has observation levels and a private club on floor 101.
Shanghai World Financial Center. Completed in 2008, this is the second tallest skyscraper in China. It is 492 meters tall and has 101 floors. Located in the financial center, it has luxury hotels and meeting areas. Builders say it can survive a massive 8-magnitude earthquake. Its skywalk is on floor 100 and creates the sense of walking in the air above the nearby buildings and city.
International Commerce Center. Located in Hong Kong, this building is 484 meters high with 108 floors. Completed in 2010, it houses financial institutions, a 360-degree observation deck, and the world's highest hotel, the Ritz-Carlton, Hong Kong. I'm Ann Ball.
This is what's trending today. It has been a much happier spring season at Ohio's Cincinnati Zoo than last spring. Last May, zoo officials there shot and killed one of their gorillas after a young child fell into its cage. Officials feared the animal would hurt the child. The killing of the gorilla, named Harambe, led to public outrage. This spring, however, zoo officials have been celebrating the birth and survival of a baby Nile hippopotamus. Her name is Fiona. She was born on January 24th, 6 weeks early. Her premature birth meant she had many health problems. At birth, she weighed just 13 kilograms. That is more than 10 kilograms smaller than the lowest known birth weight for Nile hippos. Animal experts feared Fiona would not survive. But she did, and zoo officials have been sharing happy updates on Fiona with the public. "She has brought everyone together," said Jenna Wingate, who takes care of African animals at the zoo. "It brings us to tears sometimes." Fiona turned 3 months old on April 24th. She now weighs about 78 kilograms. Zoo visitors will not be able to see Fiona until at least June. But many have already gotten to know her through the zoo's blog and video updates. The videos have shown Fiona playing in a pool, learning to run, and taking a baby bottle. To celebrate her three-month birthday on Monday, zookeepers posted updates on Fiona all day through Instagram and Snapchat stories. The day in the life updates have included video of Fiona taking a shower, eating several breakfasts, and playing with a bucket of ice. Wingate, who helps take care of Fiona, thinks so many people like the young hippo because of her underdog story. It makes us really happy to know that one animal can make so many people happy and so excited and interested. After the death of Harambe, the Cincinnati Zoo shut down its Twitter account for 2 months. The strong positive response to Fiona has helped what zoo officials have called a healing process after Harambe. And that's what's trending today. I'm Bruce Alpert.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. In many areas of the world, taking a deep breath of air can be unhealthy and dangerous. The WHO estimates that air pollution is responsible for about 6.5 million premature or early deaths every year. It estimates that nearly 600,000 of those who die are children under the age of 5. Most of these deaths, WHO officials say, happen in developing countries. With all this pollution in the air, many people try to protect themselves and reduce their exposure. So some people use face masks. You may have seen pictures of people wearing such masks in big cities like Beijing and Tokyo. But do they work? One expert tells VOA Learning English that some work much better than others.
We see lots of air pollution that just passes right through these cloth materials. And for us, it's an important public health issue because people worldwide are choosing to use these kinds of masks to reduce their exposure.
Richard Peltier is a professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst in the Department of Public Health and Health Sciences. He studies the effects of exposure to air pollution. Recently, he was the lead author of a study on how well inexpensive face masks work. Peltier led a team that tested several types of inexpensive face masks they bought on the streets of Kathmandu, Nepal. These masks are commonly used in other polluted parts of the world. The N95 is generally considered to be the gold standard or the best. The U.S. government rates the N95 face mask for people who might work around pollutants. So air quality experts, like Peltier, know exactly what it can do and what it cannot do. Peltier calls the N95 mask a more advanced version of the inexpensive cloth masks that he studied. The researchers used the N95 mask in their study for comparison. However, Peltier says N95 masks are either not available or too expensive in many places where pollution is severe. Also, he adds, it is made of paper, so it can't be washed and reused like cloth face masks.
But what we find in many parts of the world are the unavailability of N95 masks. These aren't, you can't buy these, or if they are available, they're too expensive. So people choose to substitute the N95 masks for inexpensive pieces of cloth.
The face masks that Peltier and his team studied can be bought on city streets in places like China, Nepal, and India. He explains that these face masks have some effect, but not enough.
So the masks that we studied do have some effect. It's not a complete effect, and it's nowhere near comparable to an N95 mask.
The researchers found that the most popular type of mask, an inexpensive cloth rectangle that you can wash, provided little protection against the smallest particles. These particles of pollution are less than 2.5 micrometers and can penetrate deep into the lungs. He adds that there are other face masks on the market that meet the expectation of an N95 mask, but most of these masks are too expensive, so they are not an option for people in the developing world.
But there are other technologies out there, commercial products, that do sort of meet the expectation of an N95 mask. They do work very, very well. However, one of the issues that we find is that a lot of these masks are too expensive. They're not financially attainable by many people in the developing world.
Peltier says if you have a job that pays you $25 a week, you cannot afford a $25 to $35 face mask. So among the cheaper cloth face masks, is there a difference in quality? Peltier says yes. He explains that cloth masks with exhalation valves performed better in testing. However, it is not the exhalation valve itself that makes the mask more effective. Face masks with these valves are usually thicker. The thicker material is what makes the mask better at keeping out pollutants.
The cloth masks that had exhalation valves were a little thicker in material. There was more material to the mask itself. And we think that's actually what causes the pollution to be captured by the mask and reducing the exposure. It's not the exhalation valve itself. That valve is merely for a user's comfort. We think that the feature of the mask that makes it most useful is how thick the material is, how much material is between the air pollution and you.
Also, surgical masks made out of paper performed surprisingly well. In an interview with the New York Times, Peltier explained that these paper masks didn't fit as snugly to the face, but rather they stuck against the wearer's wet mouth. Peltier and other air pollution and health experts agree on one important thing. No matter how much you pay for a mask, they only work if they fit snugly on your face. But if they are made out of cloth, too tight is not good either. During his study, Peltier found that if a person pulled their cloth mask too tightly, it lost the ability to filter anything. You might think that wearing any type of face mask is better than wearing nothing at all.
Wearing a face mask, an inexpensive, non-working face mask made out of cloth, does give a false sense of security because it makes you feel like you're being protected when in fact you're not. You feel like you're doing something good for your body to protect yourself from air pollution, but in reality, it's not doing anything at all, or it's doing very little.
Peltier adds that this false sense of security might prevent you from taking other measures to protect yourself, such as avoiding highly polluted areas or avoiding outside exercise during times of very high pollution. Health officials around the world warn that air pollution is only getting worse, and not just in poorer countries.
Air pollution is a global problem, and it is growing in magnitude across the planet. And individuals can make informed decisions about reducing their exposure to air pollution, whether it's through wearing appropriate masks or avoiding an exposure, that will, in fact, have health benefits to that individual.
And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.